Just start it, Tina, please. Hi, Steve Gilmore here. This is the Gilmore Gang for Saturday in 2017. All right. He's thinking about restarting. Okay. Welcome to a distributed gang. We start with, as usual, Frank Radis in London. Welcome, Frank.
Glad to be here. Thank you. Hi, guys.
And then the other guy who's usually in London is Keith here, who's in, where are you now, Keith?
In Scottsdale, near Phoenix.
Okay.
Look how beautiful it is.
Mm.
I've been at that place. That's, doesn't that look like the...
It looks very pixelated to me.
Constellation thing, yeah.
It's the Fairmont Princess. It's pixelated because they don't have good bandwidth. They have nice gardens, but no bandwidth.
And then,
Ben, nothing's changed.
And nothing's kind of like changed. The UK.
Nothing's changed says...
That's the name for the show, Gardens But No Bandwidth.
Okay. Well, I'd like to thank everybody who showed up today, and we'll see you again next time. Well, we named it already, right?
Yeah.
Doc Searles, welcome. Where are you?
I'm in New York City here.
Okay, well, most of you is there. A certain amount of a still is coming to us.
He's okay.
Your bandwidth is a little challenged, but we'll deal with it.
Dear, I don't know what the deal is.
The Alexa show is soaking all the bandwidth up. Do you have an Alexa show, Doc?
No.
He's frozen.
I don't have an Alexa anything.
You don't?
I'm shutting other apps down just in case that's an issue, but I don't think it is.
Well, you could turn off BitTorrent as well. That would help.
I don't have that. I do have it. I've hardly used it. So,
that's what my daughter said. I don't really do that, Dad.
Yeah, that's what she said.
Boing. Okay, so today has been the day after yesterday, which was really awful. And so today is looking quite promising so far, because there have been no tweets from Melamar or whatever that place that guy talks from. No, I'm really glad that he's actually woken up the somnolent and sleeping Democratic Party a little bit. So that's good news.
I think he woke up the Republican Party a little bit too, didn't he?
No, I didn't notice that. How do you mean?
Well, I mean, even some members of the Republican Party are kind of scratching their head at this at the Comey firing.
But they're good at scratching their head, but that doesn't mean anything. It's like we'll scratch our head and then we'll pass another disgusting set of bills.
But the bad thing about having woken up the Democrats is. The Democrats are now going to think, you know, they can just do nothing and wait, and he'll kind of collapse of his own idiocy. And so the previous momentum, which is for the Democrats to wonder how to reinvent themselves, gets reduced, and they somehow get complacent that, you know, they're just going to win 2 years from now, which they might not.
Yeah, yesterday I was listening to some interviews with people in decidedly Trumpian states, and for the most part, there's been no change of mind on any of his supporters. His base is solid.
Because who really cares? I mean, if he's the king, he should be able to fire the princes. You know, I mean, I think that's how people will think. And the constitutional ramifications, I don't think his base really cares about.
Well, that's a Comey.
This is pretty much unusable.
They don't. And
from Doc, can you repeat yourself, please?
I think he's running the show brilliantly. Actually, I think he's He's doing exactly what he wants to do. He's got everybody on guard. He's unpredictable. He turns the Democrats into a knot because they wanted Comey gone. Now he gets rid of them anyway. He gets rid of him anyway. He's, you know, tweets constantly about it. But I mean, he's taking advantage of the fact that the news cycle is the length of a tweet. You know, there's no memory almost within that. I mean, he just sort of relies on short-term memory for everything and being unpredictable and being wrong. He's wrong so constantly on the facts of all sorts of things that people just sort of discount it. They just get used to it. Yeah, he does that. That's what he does, right? You know, I heard an interview with one of his guys this morning prepping to go on this tour. He's going to start in Saudi Arabia, the most repressive government among our allies. He's going to start there. He's not going to be predictable about anything. You know, that he loves autocrats. He gets along with them. That's because he thinks he can deal with them. He loves to do his deals. So he's going to go do some deals. And I think for his constituency, it's like, yeah, that's what he does. He's shaking things up. He's still shaking things up. As long as the Democrats are angry, he's doing his job. And I think that's how he sees it, too. And I think he's more interesting than anything we've had ever had under Obama or Bush, for that matter, or anybody.
You know, well, I completely disagree with the comment about Obama. I mean, I think Obama has set the table for this entire disgusting, you know, 8 years. But Bush, you know, that was more Cheney than Bush.
Still, it was the Bush administration.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I'm just saying that whatever happened under Bush, yeah, it was enabling Cheney, not the other way around.
No, but I think Trump can't be understood with the usual tool set. I think he's got a whole different tool set he needs to be understood with. One that's purely digital, that's purely epiphenomenal, that takes account of what we're doing now, right? It's all part of a much different system. I mean, the digital system underlies all the other media now. It completely underlies it. And even I had a discussion with somebody this last week who's pretty much politically unaffiliated and said they hadn't realized until Trump called CNN fake news how fake news actually is, that You need a panel of people to argue with each other in order to understand the news. And what's actually happening is that CNN and Fox and the rest of them, they're just feeling time. That's what they've done all along. You know, they're going to give you news whether there is news or not, and they're going to fill a lot of time with it. What Trump does is completely undermine that by saying, I'm going to say something that's going to matter, and then I'm going to go away, and you guys just deal with it.
You know, I would say that
whole different. Whole different.
All right. Well,
and he does it on his schedule.
I want to parse yours, Doc. I want to parse you out, Doc. I want to parse you out over the show, not just front loaded like it is right now. So,
okay.
What? You leaving? Excellent.
Go.
Yeah, I know. I'm going to get to Frank. I'm creating the opportunity for Frank. By saying that the way that I watch Trump output, press conferences, etc., as long as they last, is by not looking at what they're doing wrong, but what they're doing right. And they're doing a lot right, to agree with Doc. Okay, Frank?
Well, yes, you're absolutely right, Steve. They're doing a lot right. And Doc, you're absolutely right. It's got a lot to do with sort of the whole digital phenomenon as regards to news. I would say, though, that you know, that all of the channels, Fox included, are like you know, two sides of a coin. You get Dayside, which is straightforward news coverage, and it's kind of, I would argue, it's kind of hard to fight and say that straightforward news coverage, which is reportage, is fake. And then you get into the evening cycle, which is opinion, which can, you know, which the word fake can apply to if it's something that you think is fake, because, you know, now we're getting into a semantic argument. But regardless of your, you know, which side of the coin you're on, the whole digital aspect of news gathering and news dissemination and the 24-hour news cycle and Trump's mastery of the ability to handle the 24-hour news cycle is something that has not been around for very long. And there are very few people that aren't in the news industry that understand how to master that news cycle. And that's exactly what he's done. Regardless of whether he says something that is absolutely ridiculous, that's part of it. That absolutely ridiculous comment, which can be turned around minutes later, you know, take a look at what happened with Comey. He gets all of his people together. They decide that they're going to go out and say that the attorney general made a recommendation to fire Comey. His people go out in front of everybody and say the attorney general made this decision, recommended to the president. The letter's written. President signs it. His thug takes it to Comey. And then on his interview with Lester Holt, he says, I was going to fire him anyway. Completely saying something that's totally the opposite of what everyone on his team had been saying.
But his team, who cares about what his team says?
No, I think that's part of his act. That is exactly what I'm saying.
It's not an act. It's like saying that, you know, that Mick Jagger, he's just clowning around and dancing, you know? What the hell?
No, okay. Now we're having another one of those conversations about words. You know, I know words. I think it's part of the way that he manipulates the news cycle, and he manipulates his team to make the news more interesting, or the information that gets out there more interesting, so that he can then watch it on cable and then regurgitate it back out in the way that he wants to regurgitate it back out. You can only do that in a digital news world.
Okay, but I'll quibble with your words. I think that Doc's more on it when he says that he's not manipulating his team. He doesn't care. I mean, if he could have a better team, if it could be, you know, 17 mini Donald Trumps, so that he could go and watch more TV, he'd be happy about it.
He doesn't want a better team.
He doesn't care.
He's not that's the thing. He's not a manager. He's a leader, and he has no concept of execution, other than his own execution. So the concept of a team doesn't even arise for him. The bad news stuff, the fake news stuff, is kind of interesting. I just posted a link in the chat. You know, from the Glasgow Media Centre at Glasgow University, they did this whole series of books called Bad News, quite a few decades ago, and it was a left-wing critique of the framing of the news. You know, their classic example is you describe someone as a terrorist when someone else in their own country describes them as a freedom fighter, and the language of the news creates a fake framework that is aligned to the ideology of the teller. And all Trump is really doing is repeating what the left have always said, which is the news is not neutral. The news has a point of view, and it's told from the point of view of the teller.
I disagree with that too. I don't think he's telling that. That's just a fact. It's always been a fact, and now you know, we get that fact 24/7, 365 channels a second.
Yeah, but that
you're priming the pump.
That means that everyone kind of agrees that the media can't be trusted. You have to have your own point of view. So he's articulating what we've all known ever since we started thinking. The audience is already persuaded, before he even says it, that the media can't be trusted.
You know, if you think about it, because I know you all do, fake news is not new, as is priming the pump as a statement is not new. You know, I was reading a story the other day about how there was this guy back in, like, in Byzantium that created this fake news in order to make sure that the gossip that was going around the community was put out as fact to help change elections. You know, and then you can follow it all the way up through and including the William Randolph Hearst, and then the New York Post, and then to the Sun, and then today. And now we have a television show called Fake News with Catherine Ryan, which is absolutely hilarious. So it's really kind of it's almost like the fake news conversation it's become so much a part of what people talk about that it's almost, I don't want to say that it's been overwhelmed by its overuse, but it feels like that to me.
Clive in the chat says Trump is malware, and it's kind of interesting because I was at a talk last night, which was off the record, so I won't say who said this, but it's a very senior exec in an internet company said, what we're seeing now is a bug. From the point of view of engineering, it's a bug. And an otherwise healthy operating system has developed a bug. Malware is kind of a similar associated concept. I don't really agree with that. I think what's happened is the operating system has ceased to be trusted by the users. And so they'd rather screw it up than play the game the operating system suggests they should play, because they're so disillusioned and alienated by the way the operating system, democracy, U.S. democracy, Washington works, that they really don't give a shit. They'd rather throw a spanner in the works. So it's worse than a bug. It's when all the users decide to support the bug against the OS.
Okay, Doc. I didn't want you to be that quiet, Doc.
I think that all the ways that those of us on the left in a knee-jerky way take Trump less than seriously miss what he's really doing. And I think what he's doing is reprogramming the presidency, reprogramming government. To a large extent, this aligns very well with the Republican agenda, and they don't fight him because they think they can get enough of what they want through him. But he's just, and I actually think even calling him an authoritarian isn't good enough. Isn't a good enough description. I think he's, I do think he's a megalomaniac. I do think he really wants to be the winner. I mean, that's what he does. And he brings a portfolio of interests and concerns and vanities and a bunch of other things in there that are all about what makes him who he is. But it's what he's doing is actually reprogramming it. I think and malware is a good metaphor, but I don't think it's as good as reprogramming. And I'm not sure there's a damn thing we can do to stop it, quite frankly. I think we just have to just hope he doesn't get us into a war. And that he screws up enough, which he probably will, that he'll get taken out on the Russian thing. And I think there's a very good chance that that will happen. But
I think, Doc, I think there is a way, which the French kind of showed, and Bernie kind of showed it here a bit. Reprogramming is the right thing to do, because the underlying thing is not working well enough for most of the people most of the time. Yes. So if you want to beat him, you have to be a reprogrammer too, but you have to reprogram in a way that meets the needs of the majority.
Well, Marceau did that, I suppose, in France.
Okay, snap poll. How many, go around the table. How many people, well, raise your hand if you think he's going to be removed before the end of his first term. Thank you very much. Yeah. Okay. Please continue.
Are not small. I don't think the chances are small, but I don't think they're better than 50-50.
Yeah. In other words, you don't think it's going to happen, right?
No.
Doc?
What's that?
It's not going to happen, right?
It's unlikely to happen.
That's all I wanted to say. Yeah. Thank you. Go ahead, Frank.
Well, I just like the way the conversation was heading into that direction of trying to of looking at it as a digital issue. I think it's a fascinating way to look at it. There's a lot of ways that you can say that this is parallel to some type of a digital issue, whether it's malware or whether it's a virus.
You use digital in the, a sort of media, new TV. kind of framework. What do you mean by that?
In the case of that, I was agreeing with Keith, not necessarily talking about digital.
It was Doc that you were agreeing with.
I was with Doc. I was agreeing with Doc.
That's the deepest sense. I just mean it. We're in a digital world now. That's how I meant it. Not in the media sense, because I think media is just one of the many big things that are affected. All of finance, all of government, all of it is all affected by digital technology.
Understood. What I was trying to get was Frank's particular frame on the table, because digital in the world of television and media has a slightly more specific and different context. I'd like to get Frank to verbalize that, please.
So this week, I learned about something that you guys probably already know about, is this really cool device that Amazon presented at a fairly private event at CES this year that was the culmination. It's a television, or it's a device that allows all content from all different places, digital content, online content, linear content, television content, broadcast content, podcasts, text, everything, to be brought into one device through the use of a very sophisticated yet user-friendly user experience that is voice-activated. I had a chance to see some of this, and what it said to me was that now all of these different places where you can get content, and let's talk about content in the space of news right now, whether you think news is entertaining, whether you think news is fake, or whether you think news is something you absolutely have to have because you have a right to have it, is now available on all the platforms all the time, and now on one device in a way to get to it really easily. These are the kinds of things that are going to change the way, and they're digital, that are going to change the way that people consume this news content, and it will affect the way people think. Now, take that a step further, and we'll talk about the world of, say, the self-driving car. One of the things that's being done in self-driving cars is people aren't going to have to drive the cars, but they're going to need to be doing other stuff inside those cars. And what are those other things that they might be doing? Consuming content, whether it's news, weather, sports, music, whatever it is. But it's just another way to consume content through a digital means. And that means more ways to get news, regardless of what kind of news it is. And I think that it's pretty clear, if you take a look at how news is being viewed and consumed right now, because of what's going on with Trump and because of the way he's managed to manipulate and or articulate or utilize the news cycle and this whole digital content distribution model, that things have changed, and they have now, I believe, changed forever. That's my take on it.
Okay, but that's not a definition of digital. But you lost all the time with what you did say, which was interesting. Go ahead, Keith.
I was going to say, I think the word news gets in the way of understanding what's going on. I think the framework we can understand it through is what in digital we called for many years one to many and one to one. And what's happened is Trump has developed a one-to-many form of articulation through various channels, Twitter being very important but not the only channel. And because of alerts and notifications, one-to-many also becomes one-to-one because individuals get that message personally to themselves. And then at the local level, one-to-one takes place in the analog world, where people talk to each other about, you know, immigrants, the economy sucking, their wages going down, not up. And so you've got this completely new dissemination channels that have all the benefits of one-to-many whilst feeling one-to-one. And that's what technology has made possible. And it isn't really news, it's communications.
Yes. That was exactly what I was trying to say, Steve.
So what I was trying to get you to say was what digital means in the world that you reside in, of television and marketing and you know, that world. There's a particular thing that digital implies. Doc, I know you.
Well, it means
you can answer this question, Doc, because evidently in San Francisco yesterday, you delivered a speech to that incorporated this, the answer to this question. I'll just keep waiting.
What's that?
I'm just going to wait until somebody defines what digital means in modern television, you know, context.
Immediate.
Everybody can produce and everybody can consume and everybody can participate. And focusing only on the big companies that at the moment make it possible misses that point. That we're doing it on Facebook or we're doing it on through Alexa, or whether Apple slips on a banana peel, as somebody said in the chat, is secondary to the fact that we all have the means to participate now. And there's a new tech that comes along every 6 months, whether it's a bot on the supply side or it's a notification on the demand side, or we're both on both sides. We're going to make use of these things, and there are going to be more and more ways for all of us to say anything to anybody. And this is just one to many or one to one. It's any to any. And but in the middle of that, we have these mechanisms like Facebook that are dividing. I mean, you know, in the chat side, there was somebody said that there's a disconnect in a relationship between the white working people and the elites. Well, there's always been a disconnect there, but there was at least something in common that we all sat down and watched at one point Walter Cronkite on CBS tell us what the world was about every single night. And Eric Severide doing his commentaries. He was like our grandfather telling us how the world was. And we don't have that anymore. There's nobody doing that. And worse, we have a president who's basically taking one side and saying, I'm on this side. I'm with these guys. These are my buds here, and they're going to be my amen corner. And screw you if you don't want to deal with that. And they love it, you know, and on the other side, he's playing us, you know, and so he's playing CNN and the six people that Anderson Cooper talks to every night, trying to make sense of what Trump just said.
I know, but, you know, at the end of the day, CNN can pay the bills, you know, maybe right now with that, but that's going to get really old really quickly.
So I'm going to get academic here for a second. I'm a great lover of Marshall McLuhan, who said that you're missing the point if you're looking at the field rather than the ground. And the field is all the crap we're talking about. It's everything that attracts our attention. And the ground is the simple fact that everything is going digital now. And every institution that depended on something analog is now in a digital situation. And they're all getting their gears stripped by it. And it's a very hard thing to understand. And even as they get expert at it, it's hard to understand that the simple fact that you could turn everything into bits and invent stuff at a lightning pace, and all kinds of new weird stuff arises out of that, the AI and machine learning and God knows what else that we get obsessed with and think only the big companies can do it.
I buy this, but I also want to engage in my favorite venue, which is Vendor Sports. So I'm going to go back to various people have complained and quit the show over the years about my proclivity for Vendor Sports, and they can go fuck themselves. There's something in the chat that reminded me of this. I think it might have been Clive or somebody. Yeah, it was the thing about Clive. Would you please scroll back? You know, you're too far back. You're too early, so I can't find it. He said something about how if the banana peel reference, if Apple slips on the banana peel, then Amazon's going to walk in. Let's have another snap poll. Is Amazon going to overtake Apple? Raise your hand.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm with Doc.
It's going to be.
Yeah, it's they're not going to overtake each other. They're their own each other's best friend.
Yeah, and look, and they just got into bed together with Amazon now being available.
Finally.
On the
well,
on
allegedly,
TV.
We'll so. See. It, you know, the summer's a long way off.
So maybe it's not a takeover. Maybe it is, as you know, that thing that Doc was doing. It, I think it probably is more like that. And I mean, they're the two big powerhouses. There's no doubt about that. And they offer various things that the other guy doesn't. But I think that, you know, the Amazon cloud service may be just that little tiny thing that maybe pushes them ahead. Not that it matters, because I think that it doesn't matter, because it's all good for the consumer.
Okay, well, so in other words, you're like this now, right?
Steve, what is Amazon? Because it's kind of hard to pin it down. It's more than one thing for sure. So it's the bit of Amazon that does Prime and devices. The cloud, I'm not so sure, is even relevant in the context of Apple and Amazon, really. Because Amazon can do in the cloud, Apple can do. And Apple doesn't really want to sell the cloud. It wants to use the cloud.
I don't know. I had a conversation with a high-ranking banker yesterday morning who said that what Amazon's doing in the cloud, there are four cloud companies, and every big company in the world is going to do their back end on one of those four cloud companies. And Amazon owns it. Amazon is the main one there, and the services they provide through AWS are so far more advanced and involve so much more, for that matter, AI and ML than the others do, that it's not even close. And they also lead in the voice assistants and the automated assistant thing. And if they can invent a phone. This is the banana peel, and I think it's a real banana peel. I mean, if they can invent the next generation phone that is just you say what you want, and it's going to come through. They take Prime and they put it on your phone, and you subtract out every, you know, I want to hear the Gilmore Gang. I want to hear the Gilmore Gang I heard a Gilmore Gang last fall about such and such. Bring it to me. And if that replaces all apps. And if that replaces all apps,
it's already here, basically. I mean, I just don't. I think at a commodity level,
I gotta have it.
At a commodity level.
But they're all going to do that. That's going to be.
They are already all doing that. Yeah. That's my point.
Varying degrees of quality, but yeah.
But you know, it was Palm versus Nokia versus. BlackBerry in smartphones until Apple came out with the iPhone and Android knocked it off and the game changed utterly.
That's
the kind of game change I'm talking about here. If they come out with a rectangle that you can put in your pocket and say anything you want to and it's going to know what you want and understand it well, that is a major, major, major game changer that's going to have a lot of people throwing out their Androids and iPhones. And
if you look at how
movie 10 years from now, as flip phones do now.
Yesterday, hang on a second. I'm going to mute everybody. I want to say what I want to say, which is that yesterday I used my Apple Watch to receive notifications. To send notifications, to reply to notifications, to answer the phone. It's a speaker phone. It's about 20 different things that I use increasingly every day, to the point where the battery is starting to wind down, to the point where I have to buy a new one. That's what's going on in just one of these devices. So when I say that this is that. What you're talking about, Doc, is a horse race between three or four leaders that are basically synonymous with each other. It's commoditized already. There's not a lot of room for anybody to break out of the pack here in a way that's going to meaningfully disrupt, for example, Apple. I just don't buy it.
Well, there are some changes happening. I spent the last week looking at Hulu Live TV, and comparing it to PlayStation, View, DirecTV Now, and YouTube TV, in the context of Apple TV and the Amazon Fire TV. So I was trying to figure out, should I cut the cord with Comcast? So I was looking at all this stuff, and what you realize is that Apple is in prime position to be the integrator at the UI level because of the Apple TV is you know, now in its fourth generation. I've now got live channels. By the way, PlayStation View kills all the others. It's way better, but it's expensive. It's $72 a month if you want everything. So it's not cheap, but it's got DVR, your favorite shows, live TV. It's got a program guide, and it's all on Apple TV, and it's really, really good. Hulu UI sucks, but they've got a DVR. They got most of the content, not everything. They don't have AMC, for example. None of them have got Comedy Central. They've all got Showtime. They don't have HBO. You've got to buy HBO, apart from PlayStation View, which does have HBO and Showtime. So, you know, there's a lot going on in the reorganization of how you get stuff delivered to a screen in your house. And it feels to me as if Apple is way ahead of anyone in being the interface to that. Chromecast, not even close.
I disagree. Well, I agree with everything you said, except for the last part. I think that
Amazon...
Amazon is just take, as far ahead as Apple
I
is.
Yeah, I agree.
But not further
Steve,
ahead.
You have perfected, by the way, the Anderson Cooper eye roll. I just wanted to mention that.
Who's that?
The Anderson Cooper eye roll.
No, who has perfected it?
You have.
You have.
I've been sitting here watching you eye roll on some of our comments.
I've been watching Trump trying to. Oh, I'm just trying to do Trump.
That what it is? I'll tell you something, though, Keith. I feel a lot about the same way you do, because I have almost all the same devices that you have. We've had this conversation before. And, you know, I think it boils down to, in a lot of cases, because, Steve, you do make the right point. Everybody is aiming towards it. There's no doubt that someone, I believe, will jump out in front of the pack, though. I think that that there will be an innovator that will do something that will be different. But I think it boils down to the user interface and it boils down to the ease and, you know, how easy will it be for the consumer to be able to get to whatever it is they want whenever they want it. That's really going to be the key to this, regardless of what it is. It doesn't matter what it is. And it's not about a skinny bundle or it's not about a giant cable package. Look, Comcast actually has some pretty cool stuff out there in terms of user interface. But when I saw this thing that Amazon was doing, being an owner of all of these external devices that are all plugged into the back of my TV through hubs because I don't have enough USB ports to plug them all into, I was astounded by it. And in the end, what I said to this guy who was demonstrating it was, it's really about the ease of the user interface. Hey, I want to see movies with Sylvester Stallone in it. This giant list will come up and it'll be from all the places where I might be able to see that movie. And some of them are pay and some of them are not pay. And some of them are sitting in some cloud somewhere. Some of them are on my own DVR. Some of them are in all these other places. Some of them I can actually go down to the store and buy, which is, you know, like kind of like a fax machine. But the point is that it gets you all of what you want when you want it, and then you have access to it immediately. And by the way, it's not just on that 50-inch screen in your living room. It's on every device. It may be on your watch. It's certainly on your phone. It's certainly on your tablet or on your laptop.
What do you think about the TV Guide UI going away, which is Hulu's main claim is they've got rid of the TV Guide. PlayStation View has it, but once you've found your stuff you like, you don't go back to it anymore. Feels to me like the TV Guide is not the right UI for the future.
I agree with you. I don't think it's about the electronic program
voice,
guide anymore.
Voice wins. The TV Guide's gone.
Exactly. I think it's voice. But you know, it basically it's going to be the TV Guide and the electronic program guide will be in the background. You won't see it. You won't have any way of accessing it with your eyes. But
Doc,
your voice
this
takes
is your,
you to wherever.
This is your shot, Doc. The private API. Please speak.
Yeah, well, you know, there's work going on all of us having our own API where we're the ones that are that are making these calls out for whatever. I guess that's where you're going with this. I know it's
no, that's where you're going with this. I'm asking you.
Well, it's one of the places I could go. I'm not familiar with the TV guide you're talking about. So I'm really, is this a guide that's like the one in that you get with every cable thing? You just look through the list of what's there, or some other thing? I'm not really sure.
Yeah, I think you're talking about all electronic program guides in general, aren't you, Steve?
What I'm saying is with Comcast, the fastest way to be able to find anything is to say it. And the same thing is true for the iPhone, and I'm sure it's true for Alexa.
Yeah. I think that's going to be, obviously that makes complete sense. And we just got a new Samsung TV in Santa Barbara, and the problem there is that it does have a voice-activated thing where you can talk to the TV if you want, and you can ask it things. The problem is that it thinks our Dish TV is Cox. It gives us the entire Cox lineup. It won't give us Dish, and Dish blames Samsung, and Samsung blames Dish. So what we're going to have to end up doing is getting a new Dish DVR that will hopefully communicate better with the Samsung thing. But this is part of the problem that we have in the world right now. I can speak as if this thing's going to kill, this thing's going to win over everything else, and then when you try to integrate what different big companies are doing, it kind of gets screwy. And it's in their interest in some cases to get along, in other cases not. I mean, one of the things I found with this banking guy yesterday was that, you know, they're partnered with every single big company you can name, and every company has a different culture for partnering. Apple's very hard to partner with. Amazon's very easy. Microsoft's relatively easy, at least for them. And it's sort of an interesting thing how this all works. You know, that Amazon now is working with Apple on one thing, but they're certainly working against Apple on other things. In the meantime, we get some conveniences out of it, and others we don't. I think in the long run, we're going to win because we're going to have an API that makes it very clear to every possible supplier what it is we actually want and look for, and how we're going to choose products based on those preferences.
Permission-based machine learning.
The key to what you said there is that we're going to win. All of what we're doing and all of what we're talking about, whether it's news or entertainment or sports or gaming or any of that stuff, it's really all about me, how I want to use it, and I want to play with it, and I want to access it. It's all about the consumer. Look, that's the success of the big companies like GE or even Microsoft has been about making sure that it's all about the consumer and it's all about the end user. But I think the other thing that you say that's really salient and very interesting and seems to sort of spread out its tentacles into all other sorts of businesses is the idea that things aren't compatible, that what might be good for one company and another company is maybe viewed as not good for one of those companies. I look, for example, at the music business and how the music business had to tried to use digital rights management. Sony, for example, is a great example of it, to keep people from copying their content. Well, now you can get the content anywhere anyway. So how good was that? And then if you put a Sony DVD into a DVD player, it wouldn't play. Because of their digital rights management software. It just wasn't compatible with anything. It almost goes back to the idea of the Betamax versus the VHS machine.
Right, and tape won then, right? So, and later CDs won, and now
the cloud wins.
Won, and now there's something else that's winning that everybody else is using.
Cloud. Yeah.
You know, for another.
Cloud wins.
But for voice activation, that kind of thing, there is no winner yet, and there isn't going to be a winner for a while. And
I agree with that.
You know, there's some norm that's going to emerge from all this stuff that we don't have yet.
There was one norm that did emerge from all of this digital conversation, and that was the internet, and it worked.
Right. Yeah. And the internet is that's the figure ground thing I was talking about. The internet's the ground. We all have the internet, and the internet has made all these other things possible, and it's going to make a lot more things possible. But I should say, Steve, that something that only came up in this talk yesterday. It's the first time I talked about it. Is somebody went to the trouble of rebranding VRM Customer Tech, and I think that's exactly what I've been wanting for a long time, and I think we're going to get. We're going to get tech that works for the customer. And
our long national nightmare is over.
What's that?
Our long national nightmare is over.
Exactly.
VRM was, you know, Mike Vizard coined that randomly on this show. So thank you. Rest in peace. Long live VRM.
Exactly.
What do you call it now? Customer tech.
Customer tech.
Okay. Exactly.
That's what the MarTech difference. And what happened was somebody said, well, MarTech needs customer tech. And that's what I made the speech about. And then 84 tweets later, it looked like it took. So,
well, there was, I had lunch with an old friend from the InfoWorld days, Mark Jones. And
he was there.
He had a conversation with you as well.
It was great. That was a great podcast. It was he and another guy named Jones. So I was talking to Jones and Jones about that.
Not unrelated, of course.
Unrelated, yeah.
Who knew? It's not a common name anymore.
What are the odds?
Okay, Keith, jump in, please.
I was going to go back to the personal API stuff because one of the things that happened when I was playing with these different TV apps is I programmed all of them for the shows I watch. And what you realize when you do that is there's almost no intelligence yet that lets them understand you and suggest new stuff. So, you know, going back to the 90s when everyone talked about collaborative filtering, we still aren't really there. It's still pretty dumb. It's a manual, this is what I like, that goes into my shows. And the suggestions really still suck.
So programmable, how about ad tech being applied to that? What if ad tech works exactly that way. It seems to me that it could be applied.
It sucks as well, right? Ad tech sucks as well. It's not very good at knowing what you're interested in.
But it's better than nothing.
It's worse.
Somebody made a point on the chat room though that I thought was really good, and it was someone named Scott who said that your home operating system will supersede your TV's operating system. I think that's a pretty interesting point, especially if you think about, you know, if the ground is the internet, and then everything that you can think about and control is in your house, for example, and if your house is the thing that you're controlling. The TV is just one of those things that's controllable, as well as your communications devices or your tablets or your smartphones or any of these other things, including your heating and your electricity and your lighting and all of that stuff. That's another step beyond, and in the end, it's about the consumer. The consumer's going to demand that.
According to my dashboard app, which is discontinued, by the way, but I haven't deleted it. At Mike Pence just followed us, or me.
All right.
It can't be him. It's not the real Mike Pence, right?
It can't be.
Why can't it be? I don't know. Steve is...
I'm sure
he's
it isn't.
A brilliant orator, and Mike Pence could learn something from him.
Let's just say this, Mike. If you're watching... go back to the beginning and listen from the start because there's a lot to learn.
What? Excuse me? Oh, Mike. No, what I'm trying to point out here is that identity is going to become increasingly interesting in the private API, in the personal API space. Over to you, Doc.
Yeah, so whatever we do with identity, we're going to need natural anonymity. Phil Windley wrote something about that I was going to put in the chat, but if you just go to windley.com, windley.com, you'll see it. It's, you know, we have natural anonymity when we walk into a store in the real world, in the physical world. We're going to need something like that online too. For most things, you don't need identity. Identity is an assumption that every central system needs it in order to operate. And when we're the center, we should be able to selectively reveal who we are and most of the time a company doesn't need to know us in order to do business with us. There's no need for that. And so that's to me that's the big thing that will work out over the next few years.
The question I asked Mike Jones yesterday was When you go to Hollywood to make your way in Hollywood, what's the first thing you're looking for?
Headshots.
That's not wrong, but go on.
I thought it was going to be something filthy.
Like next, without the shots.
I want each of you to answer the question, please. When you go to Hollywood, what's the first thing that you do?
You get an agent.
That's it, right there.
What do you say?
You get an agent.
Can't do anything in the entertainment
business. Can't get anywhere without an agent.
No, and that's in the music business, that for the most part, except for the fact that now you can put your own music out there, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be a smash. Nobody's going to read your script. So, nobody's going to talk to you unless you have an agent.
Good. So, Doc, you just said that basically identity is not the necessary for business to be done. So, how does the agent fit into that model?
Well, if I have an agent working for me, if I have an intelligent agent working for me, an Alexa or a Siri or anything, they, you know, and they say, this guy needs movie tickets. I'm this guy. I'm not Doc Searles. I'm not David Searles.
I understand your point. I'm just asking. To me, the emergence of the middleman is the emergence of the multinational corporation. If you go to the idea of, you know, bots and virtual agents, then you're going to who has the most bots deployed and the most data deployed, and you're right back in this vendor sports game that I was.
But I don't think it's going to end up being that, because I think most needs that we all have actually don't require a whole lot of back end machine intelligence by a big company that's doing it differently than every other big company. We're gonna have a bunch of needs that we can express, and they'll be responded
to. But you know, that's a good answer. That's a good answer for the.
I should be able to swap out that stuff, and it should all be substitutable, right? We have that.
I'm not talking about should be or would be. I'm talking about whether it will be or not.
I agree, Steve. The implication there, I agree with. When you said when you walk into a store, they don't know who you are. I've been working on some stuff called the Internet of People, Places, and Things is what it's generally called. What is that? It's like I go into a hotel, I'm in the lobby, I want to check in. My smartphone tells the desk I'm there. The desk gives me a code to unlock my door, and I don't need to check in. I just go and open my door. That involves two things. Cloud, having the ability to give me a code to unlock the door, and secondly, knowing who I am, knowing I'm the guy that should be the guy that gets that particular room. And the way that's implemented today is usually through Bluetooth beacons being seen by the phone. The phone then goes to the cloud and says, what's this beacon about? And he said, oh, it's your check-in beacon. I see your key. Here's your key. That's going to happen in stores as well.
I know, but you're making the case for these things not being mutually exclusive, which they are. What Doc's talking about when he says that there is no need for the individual identity being mapped or tracked is accurate. And what you're saying about the fact that there's going to be a general tendency for these big iron solutions to be grafted onto this because of the general market forces, the way that Hollywood collapsed and was replaced by the agencies is because of this middleman, power center that began to emerge, and we're still in the midst of that in terms of the networks. But this is all being overturned right now by the fact that each person has this on-ramp to the network that can avoid that. So what I'm asking Doc, really, because I think that, you know, he just pronounced this corner turn in his speech yesterday. I mean, this is the Clutrain guy right here. So we have to listen to him a little bit. And so what I'm asking is,
just because I was in the Bible doesn't mean I'm right.
No, I didn't say you were right. I just said that we have to listen to you a little bit.
A little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what I'm saying is that you get to have the test applied to you, which is not what should be or what we want to be or what it's right to be, but what will be.
Yeah.
What's actually going to happen? And I say that the rise of this mediating force that people, you know, people are just very willing to, oh, you want my every piece of information about me and I get a free bazooji? Oh, I'll take it. Here.
Well, it's an irrelevant concern, Steve. It doesn't matter that what people are willing to do now or going to do now. And I think the case that Keith shared is a great case that does require some entity having access to some identity information about me. But the truth is that the concerns, the actual needs and concerns of that hotel are pretty limited. They're going to fill a room with a guy, you know, who's traveling, and we can make these things work. What I'm saying is that there, in the dance between supply and demand, there are going to be more and more ways for the customer to lead. That's customer tech. And there's not much need in most cases to have complete identity information, to have complete, you know, I mean, one of the ways that ad tech's failing is that it actually knows too much. I mean, it thinks it knows too much. We're going to, oh, we know all these things about this person, and so we can push some crap at them, and it fails at that level, that it wants to, it thinks the sell side is all that matters, rather than the buyer, the buyer being in control. We're going to valve all kinds of information about ourselves. There'll be all kinds of big winners. I don't doubt there'll be intermediaries of all kinds. That's a fine thing. There's nothing wrong with that, and I really hope that Apple and Microsoft and Google and Facebook and everybody else compete with.
What about Amazon? You said Amazon was going to win.
What's that?
What about Amazon? You just listed everybody but Amazon.
Amazon is the front runner here, and I think that you know they really are the front runner. And I think but the fact is that and Amazon is much broader in retail than Apple is, and I think they're going to get much more experience in retail when they finish being the hermit crab of books. I mean, one of the most sad and shocking things I saw recently is sitting with a friend in at Columbus Circle and in that shopping center there at a bar on the fourth floor overlooking Columbus Circle in that lovely building. And they're coming soon, Apple Books, right here at Apple Books location. Apple, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, Amazon. Amazon Books is going to be there. And it, you know, Amazon managed to kill off, like, the local bookstore all over the world, you know, and here they are. They're going to run their own. But they're going to have experience with actual face-to-face retail. That's something Apple has now, and they're going to get that, and that's going to make a difference for them, too. But they're involved across the board. What they're doing with so many things, and especially because they have the cloud, holy shit. I mean, they are very advantaged there because they have contact with customers, huge contact with customers. They're the biggest learning organization in the world right now, Amazon is. I'm very long on them, even though they scare the shit out of me because I think, you know, they're going to take over way too much. So,
check, please.
But, yes, go.
So, so who's going to create the personal API back end that's going to be federated and all of that? You know, open source nonsense.
The Brigham Young University is working on it, and so are a bunch of others.
And you think that's going to stick to the wall?
No, I think it's going to get used by the wall. It doesn't mean that they're going to get rich off of it. It means that it's open source stuff that's laying around that they're working on right now that is a personal API, and some work has gone into it. So go to GitHub and pull it down and do it yourself.
I think the most likely scenario is that Apple will build some kind of information broker into iOS that means that you get to control what you share and who with in what context, and you'll be prompted, like, do you want to give the check-in desk your details so you can avoid the line? Similar with an airplane ticket or a menu and getting food in a restaurant. There's going to be an edge broker service where you get to control your information and choose whether to share it on a case-by-case basis. And it will be federated at the device level, but it'll be owned, you know, the data flows will be built by Apple, and Google won't go there because their model is advertising, not enabling the individual to get through life better, but enabling the individual to be exposed to ads. So I think there's going to be a bifurcation between Google and Apple in this world.
Yeah, I disagree. I think that what's happening right now is the alliance between Amazon and Apple, which will then get Google will be forced to fold themselves into it. Every time I see an article about Microsoft and I put it in the Gilmore Gang app, coming soon to an area near you, I put it in the Apple group.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting that you did that today, and especially since Microsoft now thinks it's a mobile company. You know, I think the interesting thing is that all of the media companies have these very, very big investments in innovation, and their innovation people are not just trying to figure out, you know, how to create an app that'll market a TV show, but they're trying to figure out how do they bring in the advertisers that make products that have this content that lives on a screen, whatever that screen is, and how that stuff gets distributed, and making deals with Amazon, which is also creating content, and Apple, which is distributing content, and Google, which is trying to distribute content through YouTube, and on and on and on and on and on. And it's all about the innovation. And I absolutely believe that that innovation and those people that are doing those innovations are looking at it from the perspective of the consumer. And because it's about the consumer, two things happened here. Doc talked about Amazon and the cloud. Thank you very much. I totally agree. And the second thing is the consumer is going to be the winner anyway.
Okay. So since Keith has to wrap in now 4 minutes, Doc has a question. I'd like to have you just had your last word, Frank. Doc,
thank you.
you want to get the answer to your question about dropping off, or?
Ian said something. Apple 50% model-to-model dropout rate in China WeChat versus 80% plus in most places. I don't know what he's talking about. So, but it sounds interesting. That's just my question.
Okay. All. And anything else to say before we wind up here?
No, we covered a lot.
I think so, too.
What Keith, that refers to, Steve, is Apple's iPhone sales in China were quite a bit lower than previous year. And a lot of the reason for that is that the Chinese interface is software, which is WeChat. And there's a lot of really good but much cheaper phones that do WeChat. So the point that was made by a lot of the analysts was that China is a software universe and WeChat is the interface and the phone is a commodity. And therefore, Apple really doesn't have the same edge in China that it seems to have here.
And that's your summary of the show?
No, that's my summary of what.
Okay, well, you've eaten up 2 minutes. Now you've got 1 minute left.
My summary of the show is that there's a lot of change going on, and I'm interested and intrigued by your Apple-Amazon axis. I had not yet hard-coded that this was a substantial strategic alliance.
Apple TV is going into Amazon, and the Amazon Prime player is going in Apple TV.
It's, I know that, but I was,
that's
I
the whole ball game right there.
And I was pleased to hear it, because now I'm going to get rid of my Fire TV. I don't need it anymore. But I interpreted it as tax.
Yeah, you're going to get rid of it in favor of spending three times as much for two shows, so that your grandmother can, you can make sure that your grandmother's still alive.
Yeah, you need the Fire TV to use the Sling Box. So I'm just saying.
Okay, so that is your last word, Frank. I was going to give you one, but you just took it.
Okay.
I want to thank Ustream. We use Ustream to record and stream the Gilmore Gang, as well as G3. A great G3 episode just recorded on Thursday. Both will be released as soon as I can mix them. So sometime later today or tomorrow morning. And I want to thank NewTek and their TriCaster. I want to give a shout out to Philip Nelson, who has left NewTek, without Philip Nelson and his and NewTek, but particularly Philip Nelson, this show would not be a television show, would not be here. We wouldn't be here. We'd be doing something else. We'd be talking into paper, you know, toilet rolls like this. But Philip, you are the greatest, and I hope that your new endeavor dwarfs what you've already accomplished, which is a lot. I'd like to thank our producer and director, Tina Chase Gilmore, without which I wouldn't have a life. I'd like to thank the amazing Doc Searles.
That's not this one. That's the other guy.
No, that's the other guy that plays you on TV.
That's right.
Okay. I'd like to thank the amazing Frank Raddus.
That's the other guy. Thank you. Thank you.
That's what she said.
Exactly.
And, I'd like to say thank you to the amazing Keith Teer.
Thank you to the amazing Steve Gilmore.
Well, I appreciate that thought. Thanks to the chat room. You guys are even more amazing. And luckily, there's a link in the TechCrunch release of these shows to the chat rooms, so you can follow along at home and add. I love these forlorn comments about how, you know, when we're not on the air, about how we don't care about anybody. And, you know, where's your notifications now, Steve? Well,
hey, by the way, tremendous amount of interaction on the Facebook page today, as well as in the chat room. I mean, it's just a ton of people came in that I hadn't seen here before. And I do want to ask one question, Steve, because one of the people in the Facebook page asked, is Gilmore Gang available as a podcast? I don't answer.
That changes from day to day. At the moment, I don't believe the TechCrunch produces an audio-only version of it. So my advice, I don't have my prop, but my advice for if you want to see, just download with RSS or some open source standard, and then just, if you don't want to see anything, then just cover your eyes. It'll be okay. Deal with the I'm not appreciated by our producer here when I say these things, but this isn't a podcast. This was a podcast, and it will always be a podcast, but streaming is where it's at, and that's what we're doing right now. So I want to thank everybody who showed up, and especially those who didn't. We'll see you again next time. Bye-bye.
I hear birds.
Yeah, I hear Kevin's birds.
Wow, what a way to go
Kevin's
out.
Kevin's not here.